Hey, Movie Vault fans. Today, we have a special guest, Jonathan Englund from Hedman Englund Agency, joining us to discuss the 1993 blockbuster hit Groundhog Day, starring Bill Murray. Let Hedman Englund Agency help build and protect your assets. Call them at 614-486-7300 or email them at service@hedmanenglundagency.com. That's service@hedmanenglundagency.com.
Welcome to the Movie Vault.
Hey.
My name's Ben Stanhope.
I'm Zachary Leibold. I haven't said the Uri. And
Jonathan Englund.
From?
Hedman Englund Agency.
Ooh. Who you may have heard from the podcast if you've been listening at all. You'll have heard it most of the episodes, a reference to Hedman Englund Agency. So now, in the flesh, we have a representative from the company.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
We've left Easter eggs in our old episodes for this moment, so.
If you keep repeating the episode or the episodes over and over again, eventually you get to a reality where somebody from the insurance company is on the podcast, and that is why we are doing Groundhog Day.
Yeah, over and over and over.
And now, from now on, we're only going to be doing Groundhog Day for every episode, and there'll just be different variations of, we'll have different guests on. So we're now the Groundhog Day Vault. No, I'm just kidding. Mr. Englund.
Jonathan. Mr. Englund, whatever. I'm good.
I'm too formal. is this one of your favorite movies? Is that correct?
It's becoming one of my favorite
movies.
Becoming,
okay.
Yeah, so maybe not at first, but it grew on me, and here we are.
Talking like after about multiple it. Times watching
multiple
it.
Times kind of does it to you. It can. Yeah. And my journey in life is kind of, I've been able to relate to it more and more as I see the movie. And the more I see the movie and relate to it, the more I'm really liking it. And after knowing that I was going to be on a podcast with this, I found more reasons to like it. So I'm stuck. I'm stuck in it.
Okay. And so now, from somebody who wasn't alive when this movie was first out, what was your first experience watching this movie? Like, do you remember when the first time you watched it? Or is it one of those movies that you've just always sort of, it's always just come on and you've always watched it? Was there like a particular moment that you remember watching the first time?
I was thinking you might ask a question like that.
Ooh, he came prepared.
Not that prepared, but just I think that the best way to answer that question is if you think of some comedians, like comic geniuses, that you enjoy now that are new and upcoming, that's how you have to relate to this for me. When you have comedians that are kind of earlier into their stage, so like this movie, did y'all ever see What About Bob?
Nope.
Haven't seen What About Bob?
No.
So
What About Bob?
Well, that's Bill Murray. He's in that. And pretty funny character in that movie. A lot of people like that movie. And that movie was a couple years before Groundhog's Day. So I think I had this expectation of experiencing something funny with Bill Murray with this movie. And comedic geniuses seem to kind of, you start liking them more and more. So Bill Murray at the end this time, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Steve Martin. Mm-hmm. Then as you get a little bit older, then you're going into, oh my goodness, Jim Carrey. You know, there you start getting a little bit newer into
Adam Sandler,
Will Ferrell, and then you go into Jack Black, and then it takes us to who are your people? Who are
Kevin Hart,
The Rock,
Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I'm trying to think of
John Cena.
Do people go to movies to watch comedic actors anymore? That's a real question.
No.
Like I don't. I think almost the the appeal for movies has changed. A lot. Okay, yeah. Now there are a few guys. Okay, Andy Samberg probably would be someone, but he hasn't probably done that many movies. He's done a couple.
No, he just did the one on Hulu.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
That was just like this movie, actually.
Palm Springs. That's actually a really good...
It's based off of this movie, basically.
Yeah, because he like repeats the day over and over again. Yeah. I totally forgot about...
That's so weird. We just connected that randomly.
Yeah.
Wow.
So Andy Samberg would be a guy who would probably... a lot of people in our generation would be like, oh yeah, that's a guy who's really funny who I would go watch a movie for.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people don't stick to people anymore. I think they stick to franchises.
Yeah, unless maybe it's more of a TV show. Like if you knew somebody was going to be on a TV show, maybe you'd watch it. I guess there's like Jonah Hill. But Jonah Hill, like, I went through a phase where I watched movies with Jonah Hill in it, but he's never the main actor. There's, like, he's not exactly the reason that you watch the movie. So, I don't, it is interesting. I don't, like, since SNL is not as big of a force, I don't think, in our time, there probably is, like, a little different, like, take that people. Because all those people came from SNL, or most of them came from SNL. Right.
And some of these characters in Groundhog's Day, like Chris Elliott, which you probably wouldn't know.
No.
Was in a TV series called Get a Life before this movie. And he was just really a weird character. I mean, just did things stupidly, and you just kind of thought that was humorous. So when you see some of these characters in the movie, you kind of are expecting or hoping them to be funny.
Did he play that annoying guy?
He was the camera guy.
Oh, actually. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Chris Elliott was the camera guy. And then who played Ned Ryerson? It's on the tip of my tongue. Because there's a reason why that guy stood out
Steven,
to me. Steven? Isn't it? Tobolowsky.
There you go.
Yeah. So the reason this guy, I was like, that guy looks so familiar. And he was in Memento.
I even wrote that down because I thought I saw that. And I was like, hey, I can connect with Ben. Because you like to talk about that sometimes in the podcast.
You guys both forgot, hence the movie.
Yeah. So you can get so caught up on who's in what movie. And that's why they have stuff like the 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon and things where people try to connect characters together to get to Kevin Bacon or whatnot. It's fun to do sometimes. But Bill Murray, this is interesting because I was seeing on this Wikipedia, so this was kind of a transition point in his career, and it was the source of a little bit of tension on the set because Harold Ramis, the director, wanted to lean more into the comedic aspects of this movie, whereas Bill Murray wanted to delve more into the philosophical elements of the movie. And I think Ramis won a little bit more because they did deal with philosophical topics, but I think they spent more time on the comedic and romantic parts of the movie overall. But I think Bill Murray had been in enough comedic movies that he wanted to transition to where he could also play serious roles, which eventually he would do. There's a movie called Lost in Translation that's directed by Sofia Coppola that he plays maybe it's a little funny at some parts, but it's mostly just like a serious drama type movie. And a lot of comedic actors, for whatever reason, try to do that. And it's something we talked about last podcast, because we were talking about Don't Look Up and Leonardo DiCaprio and people trying to break stereotypes. And it's always interesting because if somebody is good at something, it might be like, why should they change it up? Like, what's the goal in that? But there must just be this sort of emptiness that comes eventually with only playing the same part that Bill Murray was trying to break out of.
Man, Adam Sandler must be really lonely.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was my first time watching it, so I didn't have any preconceived notions besides the references that I've heard in my life and the commercial that I saw based off of this movie,
which I can't even remember.
And Palm Springs, I guess.
Yeah, I don't even know, but. Old movies have a different feel, and I feel like newer movies these days just don't have as much, they don't have as much like
situation. They don't make movies like this.
Yeah, like really. It's mainly talking, verbal and stuff like that. A lot of the new movies are situational humor, stupid humor, you know, making stupid jokes. I don't know. I just don't find it as appealing. But this I found appealing because it's about, they had the love story in it, which was okay. But I did enjoy his development of character, which a lot of movies kind of, you know, they have the development of character as a B-plot, you know?
It makes my heart feel good that you say that.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you had mentioned Ned Ryerson. I'll call him Ned because that's... But, you know, I did not sell insurance back in 93. I hadn't been doing it that long. But I'd say like 2001 is when I got into insurance. And so Ned Ryerson is the guy who I feel like people think I am, which I laugh about that. And I think that's one reason why I enjoy it so much, because every time you see Ned, he's talking about insurance, life, any kind of insurance you need, you know, and you hate it, you cringe, and it's And it's not like I want to come up to people and talk about that stuff. I don't, but I still feel like I'm perceived that way sometimes. And so I relate to him. I think it's funny. I think he's funny. He brings up, I think, and I don't sell life insurance, but he brings up premium life insurance or I have to go, see, that's why I don't even sell it. I don't talk about it too often. But what he pitched to him the first time he saw him was something that requires a lot of money to put down. He doesn't even know him. He's like, you would really need to look at this policy. And it's a different policy that you actually dump a lot of money to immediately into, which is pretty funny, I thought. So
maybe he caught on to the fact that he was a weatherman, possibly, and thought that that meant that he would have a ton of money, which isn't necessarily true, because a lot of people were like, oh, you're the weatherman from Channel 5, and were like impressed by it. And he was, for the first part of the movie, just thinking about how fast he could get out of Pittsburgh and get out of being an anchor on a, you know, smaller city, even though Pittsburgh's still a pretty big city, like news channel. He was pretty cynical about most things, as we see at the beginning of the movie, including Ned Ryerson and life insurance. He was pretty cynical about that too. It was pretty clear he'd rather do anything than talk to him the first interaction.
That's how I would feel.
I loved it when he just punched him in the face. I don't know if anybody else enjoyed that as much as me.
That's true. Was that the second or that is the third? Like the third time.
He's like, "Are this not? I have no consequences. I'm just gonna do what I think."
Yeah, he started discovering that he's happy with where he's at, and he's getting to just get away with things, and that would be an interesting place to be in life.
Yeah. Yeah, the living with no consequences is definitely like they explored it a little bit. They also did a good job of showing that ultimately that doesn't really provide you satisfaction either, I think was kind of what they were trying to go with that aspect of the movie. And that's more of the philosophical stuff probably, right? Because the like side effect of creating the scenario creates those sort of nuanced places in life that you could never actually experience. So, of course, they had to, you know, explore that a little bit at least, because everybody who, if you were put in that situation, might get to the point where they were doing some of those things that he was doing. And then you wake up the next day and realize, like, oh, that just didn't do it. That wasn't really that satisfying. And he really starts out being a pretty manipulative person.
Yeah.
Because that's really what he's doing. He has an advantage over people, and he uses it to manipulate them.
He was memorizing her favorite things. That was a creep show for me.
Yeah, it was weird. He was being weird.
So watching it for the first time, it didn't bother you seeing the same thing over and over, like the day? Did it get annoying to you, or you enjoyed that?
No, I enjoyed it because it was a little bit different each time in what he was doing, you know? At the beginning of the movie, I was like, wait, is this what it's going to be the entire time? But then he like goes to a restaurant, he goes and talks and goes to different areas, crashes a car. So like he does other things.
He becomes a doctor.
Yeah. So it's just like, and he learns how to like become a brilliant piano player. And
that was cool.
Yeah. So I think I enjoyed that he kind of learned pretty quickly that if he's just going to waste his time doing the thing, like manipulative things, then, you know, he's not really pursuing anything great. So that was kind of like the good philosophical moral part of it, probably Bill Murray's aspect of it. But I enjoyed that part a lot. Yeah.
And he goes through a couple of low spots that take him to where he finds where he's supposed to be. The bar scene is one of my favorite. I find myself laughing out loud. And I usually don't laugh like that. Just catches y'all off guard. But when he... one of the drunk guys said, you seem like a half empty glass kind of guy. And he's the one actually talking to Bill. And that conversation is pretty interesting, because what would you do if you lived the same life over and over and over? And one of the guys says, well, that kind of sums up my life right now. You know, and I just, for some reason, that makes me laugh every time. I can't help it.
And that could even be like a meta play on people who are, you know, in that state.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of just like he's relating what he's doing. Like, you're thinking, like, wow, this Bill Murray guy's really, really stupid and dumb. Why is he doing all these things? But you're like, oh, wait, in my life, I'm doing these same things. Maybe that's a point that they were trying to hit.
Yeah. Not saying I encourage getting drunk in a bar, and but that.
And maybe if you find yourself in a place where you're doing that every day, you might want to consider making a change. Like that could be your Groundhog Day.
Yeah,
and you could reach the point where you do the thing that helps you snap out of it.
If you find yourself in a bar, just get really good at piano. You'll be fine.
I think so.
I'm trying to think another aspect of the movie. Let's see, what have we not touched on
yet? I'll fill in the gap until you find something. So another, I think about it, a rock bottom place that he gets to, and he actually literally takes this vehicle off the...
Oh, yeah.
Off a cliff. And that's about as rock bottom as it gets, I think, in a quarry. So, I mean...
They were being very literal with the... it was like, it wasn't a metaphorical rock bottom. It was actually, you hit rock bottom.
Right. Yeah. And shortly thereafter, because you're right, it does get confusing. And where do the sequences of events... Because you get lost in it. But
yeah,
I think that was one of those moments where he's... found every way that he can think of to end his life and has gotten past that part of his life. And now he's decided to make a turn. And I think that's the biggest part of this movie, I think, for me, is when you say, what are things that make you like it? I think, unfortunately, going to the end of the movie to talk about that is he takes on a life of servanthood to everybody. Mm-hmm. And he's making every moment available to make other people happy. And it took him a while to get there, but that's, I think, a big premise of the movie. And so I can't help but get encouraged every time I watch that movie. When it gets to the end, I'm always thinking, what am I not doing? What did I miss today that I could be doing or do better tomorrow? So.
And the other good point that the movie makes in regards to that is that like he eventually does get what he was pursuing at the start of the movie, but he was pursuing those things for the wrong reasons. So like he was trying to manipulate what's her name? I know the actress's name, but I forget what the actual character's name is. This always happens.
She's
Rita. Yeah. So he's interested in Rita. He sees her as somebody who has a lot of characteristics that he is lacking in, and I think he wants those things. But the way that he goes about, he's like tries to manipulate her and memorize things. And she's obviously smart enough that even though he has this like repeating day thing, that she catches on to what he's doing. She doesn't know how he's doing it, but she knows that he's doing something that's not genuine. And then eventually when he kind of puts all of that off and he starts living for other people, she's naturally attracted to that and wants to be with him instead of, you know, him like creating this environment that's perfect for her to want to be with him and like doing every or having like everything, saying everything exactly how she wants to hear, because that's probably not really what she wants either.
Now, have you ever seen her perform as an actress in any other movie? Andie MacDowell?
I'm not sure that I have. I hadn't recognized her name. I'm trying to.
So Mimi and I watched this Netflix series called Made, and she stars in that, and it's the complete opposite character of what you see in this movie. It's really interesting. It's a really interesting movie about the life of a maid, and she plays the mom of a maid, and the circumstances that you put yourself in. Sometimes you have opportunities to get out of those circumstances, but this one of the characters in that movie just keeps on falling back into that situational life.
So she would be the Bill Murray in that movie.
Yes, well,
or that show.
Yeah, she's definitely a wild child mom.
Yeah. Okay.
So interesting movie that I'd watch.
Yeah. Those exist. So yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, she's not in a ton of stuff that I've necessarily heard of, but she's in a few things. And so she worked with Steven Soderbergh and a few people. It looks like that during this period, she was in a movie called Shortcuts that I've never heard of, but she got nominated for a lot of awards for it, at least the ensemble. It looks like it was maybe an ensemble film.
Footloose.
She was in Footloose. Oh. And then she was in Four Funerals and a Wedding. Or Four Weddings and a Funeral, rather. four funerals and a wedding.
Killed off the whole cast.
A pretty depressing movie. And I think that I've never watched that movie, but I think it's a pretty well-known movie. So during that time period, she was definitely kind of. And then yeah, she was in Maid, which is her most recent thing. And she's been in tons of different TV shows and guest appeared. So she's not somebody who was in a movie in the late 90s and then sort of disappeared, which does happen. Like unfortunately, especially with actresses, sometimes after they are in this period where they're like the love interest in a rom-com, they kind of they age out of that role. And it's tough because a lot of them are like good actresses. So it's good that people have been able to find good roles beyond that. I know people like Meryl Streep and things have kind of paved the way for that sort of dramatic acting role.
I mean, for me, it was interesting to see that how quickly her character, like, because, I mean, it's the same day for her. And you saw her reactions of when Bill Murray was being himself. I don't know their names. I'm just going to say him and her. Mm-hmm. But he's being himself. She's repulsed by him, almost, like, when in the love aspect. She's, like, a little interested.
Because he's so cynical. He's so, like, she's ambitious and has a... optimistic view of the world, where he has pretty much a pessimistic.
He's just a jerk.
Yeah. He doesn't want to be there. Everything is He's just not what she's looking for at all.
Yeah, and that just like within a day, you know, like it's the same day, and at the end of the movie, she is like almost falling in love with him because he found a way to get so many things fit into his day. He had to be so busy, and imagine how many days that took for him to actually be able to like fit every single thing in within a day. Like,
that's true.
So he's walking, he's catching that kid, he's like, the kid didn't say thank you, you never say thank you. And then he goes and he is helping them with their car and helping people with this. So imagine how many repetitive days he had to have to actually add in every single thing and be disciplined enough to have every single step and minute of his day planned out to help as much people. Hopefully he wasn't like in the back of his head just doing that to manipulate her again.
Yeah, I guess you could look at it that way. But I don't think he really didn't learn anything.
He started the day off being honest with her.
Yeah.
Which, there's that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so that kind of just shows that he wasn't. And that's just, for me, that was cool because he was just learning his environment and doing things he had never done before. So it was just a new thing for him to actually help people because he wasn't used to it when he first started out, and you could tell he was uncomfortable. But at the end, he was helping that homeless guy, everything, you know, so.
Yeah. How many days do you think he was? I know there's probably a number for how many days they actually show, but I imagine that there's more days than that, really.
I think it was one.
Implied. One, well, yeah, I guess there was one day.
No, I think it was a dream.
Did you ever play the piano growing up?
No.
No, did you?
Yeah, but not
how,
super.
So how long would...
disciplined
learning how to play the piano.
Oh, that would take me a long time. Maybe he's naturally gifted. I don't know.
Sure, he could have been.
Maybe weather manning is translative, like it translates into the piano playing. I don't know.
That's one of my students. That piano teacher lady,
like,
was
but
funny.
He just became her student that day though.
Yeah, and he already like why did well that's actually a good question. Yeah. If he learned it, why did he keep going back to her? Because he had to have gone to her for practice that day. Otherwise, she wouldn't have known.
Well, he just had to reintroduce himself and say, I'm at this level. What can I learn? I don't know. Yeah, it's humbling for him. That was the best part, I think.
And where was the piano player that wasn't part of the band? How did he get to be in the band? Just interesting.
Oh, yeah, because there was a keyboard on. Yeah.
He must have just been like, hey, guys, I'm pretty good at piano, and I can play jazz piano. I mean, if you can play jazz piano, everyone else should be able to play with you if they play jazz, right? That's how jazz works. Yeah. That's my understanding.
One, two, three, four.
And everybody just are all everybody in sync. Does their own thing, but also it sounds good together.
Yeah, that is every movie does that.
That's what you learn about in Whiplash, right? That's jazz is always a perfect thing that just flows together as long as you're on my time.
As long as you bleed your hands bleed to death. That's a weird reference, but yeah.
Anyway. That movie's really a downer compared to this one.
Yeah. So how many times do you think you have seen the movie?
Ooh. I'd have to say probably 30. It's not a crazy amount, but it's a good amount.
Okay.
Yeah.
So like if I were to
is that a good amount?
Calculate how many days you have seen, how many times you have seen that day, it would be above 600.
Oh man. Well, I know that sometimes on Groundhog's Day, I mean, again, like every time there's a Groundhog's for the past, I don't know, 5 years at least in our agency, we'll post a Ned Ryerson clip because now it's just become part of it.
Yeah.
So I might watch Groundhog, like parts of it, two times in a row during Groundhog's Day. You know, I might not watch the whole thing. I might watch half of the beginning or half of the end. Yeah. So that's what's hard to give you a really good number on this.
And it's a movie that if you know what's going on, you can definitely do that because it's so repetitive. It kind of works that way. I know that that's something that I don't have as much of experience with. I know I listen to this podcast called The Rewatchable sometimes. It's a very popular podcast. And all the guys on there are like in their early 50s. And they just talk about these movies that they've seen like hundreds of times. But it's not like they sat down and watched them hundreds. It's just like it was on cable and they like turned it on. And I didn't have cable growing up. So that never happened for me. And
now it's just streaming in the background.
It's just I turned on Netflix and I hit random and it came on or whatever. But that's something that I kind of look forward to, having those movies that you just kind of come back to, or whenever it's on or you see it on, you just kind of like go to it and they're like, this is, I want to see this part. I know that's why people like Shawshank, that like that's what people talk about. They're like, oh, I can just turn on like in the middle and I'll just want to watch until the end. You when
can,
I see that
you
part,
you have your closure because you know how it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the trick to making a successful movie long term. Because there's a difference between making a movie that's successful in the theater and making a movie that is like lasts beyond its time, I guess. Like there's some movies that don't age very well.
There's also a difference between a good movie and a rewatchable movie. They vary, like a lot of times they are the same, but like sometimes they're not.
There's definitely movies that I'd be like, I want to rewatch that, but this movie's also better. I just don't want to rewatch it. Because it's more difficult to watch or consume. And maybe then we can get into some of the other movies that came out this year.
Did you like the movie Groundhog's Day?
Oh, I never actually said yes. I did enjoy it quite a bit.
Okay.
That's quite good. A bit, huh? That's
yeah. Good. I don't know how to... Now that we're not really doing official ratings, I don't exactly know. I do think that like I watched it and I was kind of like... It wasn't necessarily obvious right away, like, what was I supposed to learn from that? Or, like, what was the main point?
That means you're stuck, Ben.
But I'm
Groundhog Day. You haven't hit rock bottom yet. So.
Yeah. But then as we've been talking about it, I'd kind of, like, you guys both elaborated on different points that I was like, oh, yeah, that is really interesting to think about, or it presents this thing that I hadn't thought about in as much depth. So that's the good thing about hearing other people's opinions about things.
They change yours unless you're anyone.
Yeah. Unless you have if you can't have your opinion changed, that might be a character flaw. Like you are in you're in the Groundhog's Day of opinions.
I'm just making a joke because nobody changes their opinions.
Okay, that's a good point. It is very difficult to get people to change their opinions. Yeah. Well, maybe if it's a movie, it's a little easier. I haven't convinced anyone that Star Wars Episode VIII is really a good movie.
Yeah, you
have.
That
doesn't.
You can't convince.
I haven't convinced anybody that thinks it's a bad movie that it is a good movie.
Have you seen that movie?
Yes.
What do you think?
I can't remember because I'm
exactly.
I get lost into them all.
Okay.
Yeah, some of those are a little lengthy, and I love them. I could sit there and say I love all of them, but. It's you have to be committed to it. And then you want to watch the next one. You want to watch the one before. Mm-hmm. It depends on when you come into it, you know.
That's our generation's thing.
It's so expensive.
It's the expansiveness of, like, there's no, like, if Groundhog Day would have come out now, there'd be Groundhog Day 2, Groundhog Day 3.
Groundhog Week.
There'd be multiple characters all having their own Groundhog Day. There'd just be this big universe of...
Groundhog would get a spinoff series.
And then they start having, like they do things with, like, alternate dimensions. Like, that. Now they don't really do... This was great because what I realized, the problem is what they would do nowadays is they try to explain the mechanics of how the day repeated itself. But that is so unimportant to the movie.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I didn't explain it.
Like, it doesn't matter at all how the day repeats over and over again or how he gets out of it. I mean, you assume that because he learned his lesson, that's why he got out of the perpetual cycle. But no, there's nobody there to like tell you that that's what happened. But nowadays there would be, and it would not be as good of a movie. That was a big takeaway comparing it to modern day for me.
Yeah, things have changed. We're not there nowadays. They make movies for fans, but that this movie was for an audience to send a message to an audience. I think. I mean, and through comedy. Comedy is one of the best ways to send messages.
Right.
So, I think.
That's what Adam McKay thinks too.
Yeah. Great. He did a great job.
All right. So here's some popular movies that came out in 1993, and I haven't watched all of these. Right. So I wanted to get your opinion on where you think Groundhog Day stacks up with some of these. So we have Jurassic Park, Free Willy, Last Action Hero, Dazed and Confused, What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I threw that one in there because I watched it.
That's a good one.
Schindler's List, Philadelphia, The Nightmare Before Christmas, Mrs. Doubtfire, and Indecent Proposal. Those are like the ones that I think were referenced in like the Wikipedia article as being like the other big movies of that year.
The one that you said that I didn't like was Mrs. Doubtfire. And
really?
Some people love Mrs. Doubtfire.
Which, because it's also like a comedy, so it's the most comparable movie in a way.
I like Robin Williams. I just didn't like a lot. I didn't like the restaurant circumstance where he's having to be two people and he didn't have to put himself in that situation. So that drove me crazy, and I couldn't get past that for the whole movie. I still can't get past it today. So,
yeah, Robin Williams is another guy, actually, when we were listing out people who people would go watch his movies to see him. And then he transitioned to being a more serious actor, and unfortunately passed away.
No, not. Oh, yeah. Yes, unfortunately passed away. I thought you were saying unfortunately became serious, but there was Good Will
Hunting. Good Will Hunting was a really good movie that he was serious in.
Yeah,
on this list, I think my favorite of all of them is Dazed and Confused. And that's just a movie that it doesn't really have a plot or a point. It's just like you go hang out with these kids in the 70s. And it's probably it probably does have a few negatives that come along with that, in that, like, I'm sure life in the 70s wasn't like so cinematic as it was portrayed in that movie by Richard Linklater. But it's another movie that takes place in one day. So actually only one day, though. That's sort of Richard Linklater's thing is time. So that is an interesting movie. A lot of people like Jurassic Park, and I do like Jurassic Park, but I'm not as big on Jurassic Park as.
But how old were you when you first saw Jurassic Park?
I probably saw it for the first time last year, I think.
Ooh. So the problem with that is that if you watch Jurassic Park for the first time when it came out, dinosaurs didn't look that good from an animation standpoint.
That's a good point.
You were at the zoo. You thought you were watching what dinosaurs really look like, and I think that's what made that so appealing. Yeah. But
I think people like the science ethics question part of the movie too.
I don't care. I like the fights. It's good.
But I would say Groundhog Day definitely up here. I mean, Schindler's List is like a legendary movie, but it's one of the ones that I haven't seen that I probably should have watched. But I think that movie is going to be one of those movies that's good, but not rewatchable at all. Like,
yeah, y'all should do a podcast on that one and see how that goes.
What is it about?
It's about the Holocaust.
Yeah, it's it'll take you in a quiet place for a while. So
okay. Anyway.
And this movie did great in the box office, and beat out Summersby and Homeward Bound: The Incredible Journey, and it grossed $14.6 million in its first weekend, which included President's Day, so it got that bonus extra day to help with their.
I think that's pretty good, actually. 14.
Yeah, 14. I think
like for a comedy, that's...
I think it made a decent amount of money. Yeah. Like, it definitely did well. So from a business standpoint, everyone was happy. Bill Murray and Harold Ramis still got to do stuff after this because they didn't.
Well, and Ramis, he wrote some really good movies that are pretty hilarious. I mean, he starred in some, so I think that also was part of
the popularity. Was he in this movie?
I think
he made a cameo, right?
He did. He was the doctor.
Oh, yeah. So you catch him for a little bit.
You do catch him a little bit, but he was in Ghostbusters as an actor, but he did Caddyshack, which that was extremely popular. That would be a movie that would be similar to the same age era difference between us. That when Caddyshack came out, it was definitely an earlier movie that I was trying to catch up to. Why is it so funny? So like a decade humor, but
yeah.
Yeah. This was also the end of the working relationship between Bill Murray and Harold Ramis because of their conflicts. And I don't think they talked to each other until Harold Ramis, like right before he passed away, they talked again. So I guess, I don't know whether Bill Murray actually learned from his character in this movie. I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. I mean, you see those sort of relationships break all the time in Hollywood, and unfortunately that's probably the nature of the business. It's a little bit cold-hearted, and there's been plenty of movies that have been made talking about self-referential Hollywood movies where they talk about those sorts of things.
The guy that choked in the restaurant, that's Bill Murray's brother.
Really?
I hope I'm not lying, but I think that that's...
Hey, it's a fact you read on the internet. I'm willing to believe it.
Yeah, he makes several cameos in other movies with Bill Murray.
So try to pick those out the next time you see Bill Murray.
If we're wrong, please tell us.
So it's like Bill Murray is part of his contract. My brother needs to be in this movie. I promise.
That stuff might actually be in some of their contracts where it's like... because they write these long contracts. I know that bands do the thing where they have writers for like concert contracts, and they'll say like, you have to put, you know, Skittles and chocolate milk in my room. But I found out that the reason that they do that is not just because they're prima donnas. I mean, they might be prima donnas. That might be part of the reason. But it's also because that way they know that people read the writer.
Yeah.
So, because otherwise... they might just be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to sign that. Yeah. And then they'll be like, why didn't you get me my Skittles? I know you didn't actually read the writer. What else did you not do that was in there? I forget. How did that relate back to what we were talking about?
Well, you're saying that his brother, because brother was
in. Yeah. So maybe that's, I mean, that definitely could be part of it. Or it could just be that.
Yeah, the older brother of Bill Murray. So it's official. It's true.
What's his name?
Brian Doyle Murray.
Brian Doyle Murray. Interesting. Yeah.
Is he still alive? Because Bill Murray's kind of old.
Not on the... It looks like he doesn't have a...
Bill Murray's still acting, right?
Yes. Yes, he is.
Which he was old... He looked old in this movie. Kind of.
Yeah.
He didn't look old. I just think about how he looks when he was old so much. Like, because that's how I think about seeing Bill Murray. Like, I remember when the Cubs were in the World Series. There's Bill Murray... Like, I probably barely even knew who he was at that point, but it was like, I was like, who's this guy? So, but he was pretty old. And this picture that I'm looking at right now.
He just didn't do his hair.
No, he stopped caring at some point, probably.
Maybe at 42 million.
That was enough money where he was like, I don't have to do my hair when I wake up this morning.
Yeah, 71. He's 71.
So, okay. Really? He's only 70? I guess he's got a couple more
years. I would have guessed 73, if I had to guess.
I guess you're right. I guess that makes sense.
I don't know. He seems kind of ample still. He's just like, he's one of those, he's like, what's the Clint Eastwood guy that just made a movie recently? He just made The Mule like 2 years ago.
That is him, Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, and he.
The Clint Eastwood guy.
Yeah, I just said the Clint Eastwood guy.
You were right. You said it.
But he, like, he's like. He's like in his 70s, maybe 80s, and he's making an action movie.
Maybe closer to 90.
Harrison Ford?
That's crazy.
Harrison Ford's in Indiana Jones 5.
Yeah, spoiler.
Breaking his foot.
Yeah, and he got a lightsaber through his heart a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that was sad.
And he was in Blade Runner 2049.
Wow, that's almost how old he is. Yeah. That's crazy.
They better make a Blade Runner 2079 with Ryan Gosling as an old guy. Because that movie was so good.
That'd be so dumb. And
they could only make a new Blade Runner every how was it actually 50 years? No, it wasn't 50. That couldn't have been possible.
And then they got to make another Tron in like 20 years. And
yeah. space things out. I mean, that's the way the studios are going these days. They can't make original ideas.
The most
frustrating thing about, we just rant about what we don't like about the current state of how Hollywood makes movies. The thing that I can't stand the most is that there's these directors and they make really good original movies and then they get hired by the companies to make unoriginal, like Marvel or other series that are already in existence movies, and that's like their big thing. Like, even one of my favorite actors or directors currently working is Denis Villeneuve, and he just directed the new Dune movie and he did the Blade Runner movie, which both of them are cool or whatever. But it's like, I also like the movies that he just did that were just, he wrote them or he hired somebody to write them that based off a story or something. Like, those were really good too. Why can't those be the popular ones? I don't know.
Because of money.
Like, yeah, probably. There's definitely the financial aspect. It costs money to make movies.
I guess. We never thought about it.
The really smart people are the people who figure out how to make a movie that barely costs anything and then it makes a ton of money. That doesn't happen very often, but it does happen occasionally.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty good one.
You just Napoleon need a llama. Dynamite. Gotta rent a llama or something.
Yeah, Napoleon Dynamite, Blair Witch Project, and...
What's the movie watched by your Quentin Tarantino?
Oh, Reservoir Dogs?
Yeah, because
that one was made for like a million or something.
Yeah, it's in like a warehouse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Homeward Bound costs a lot of money.
Yeah, probably not.
A dog, a cat, another dog.
I have this theory.
The dog also, shelter.
A grassy knoll, whatever.
Let's see how much it costs. Yeah, there's no way this movie
costs. There's a house, but the house is already built. I don't think they had to build that house.
It made $57 million. To how much did it cost?
$8.
$8. It was made possible by PBS viewers like you.
Thank you. I live right across the street from that.
And non-PBS viewers, because PBS is tax-funded.
True.
So does it show a number?
No, I didn't look hard enough to find a number. But I'm sure it was made a lot more than it cost. Like, it did. I'm sure it did very well.
Unless it was purebred. I mean, the trainers, they probably did really well. And that cost some money.
Purebreds can be really expensive.
That's true.
Some directors do need to be limited. You can't just give them too much money because they won't know what to do with it. Some directors work best when they're like, you only have $10 million to make this movie, or $20 million or whatever.
It's when they have to get creative.
Yeah, it forces creativity. When you have an unlimited budget, it's actually not always a good thing. That's why, I mean, having an unlimited budget, like, people didn't like the new Star Wars movies, but they had basically an unlimited budget to do that. But that didn't make it a good movie.
How much was this movie?
Oh, let's see how much it cost to make.
This couldn't have been expensive.
It cost $14.6 to $30 million, but it grossed
for what?
It grossed $105 million. Well, probably half of that is Bill Murray's contract.
He had to pay $1,000 a day for the piano lessons.
Yeah, that's true. That is true, but it's the same $1,000. That's the thing. Inflation travels through the days. So then buys 1,000th day, it's twice the price. That's how it works.
Inflation stays with you. They didn't do the Back to the Future thing where he like tried to bet on stuff, because like he couldn't.
Yeah.
If he could. But I guess that maybe requires too far.
But what are you
going
to do in a day?
That's what I'm like. You'd have to know something in the morning.
But he robbed the bank or the guys.
If you went to a horse, I guess it's a snowstorm, so there's no.
But then you have,
horse
by
tracks.
The time it's over, you have 4 hours to use your money. That's it. So like,
and you can't take it with you.
Yeah.
Can you? What, he still had his clothes with him, but I guess he had his clothes when he started. So that's how that works.
He didn't even have to change, brush his teeth.
Okay, here's the one thing that I was thinking about. Why didn't he try to stay up to 6 o'clock? Like, he was always sleeping, and he always woke up at 6 o'clock. Like, there was no point where he was like, what happens if I just stay up until 6 o'clock? And that then
teleports.
Like, would it teleport him? Like, that was just something that they just ignored having to go through, because it probably would, again, go too far into the mechanics of the whole thing.
Yeah, I had the same question, but I decided to let it go.
Yeah, I think that's
that takes much. Many years to get there, so I'm just trying, let me help you now.
It takes another 29 viewings of the movie to get there.
Redundant questions.
Yeah. What else should I let go?
Yeah, there are probably a lot of things that we could question, but again, I didn't even notice.
That's the one thing that I realized was kind of a flaw in my movie viewing at some point, was that I would always question things, and then I was like, wait a second, the reason I'm watching this is because I don't want it to be exactly like it would happen, and like, I don't want it to be like real life. That's why I'm watching this movie.
Yeah.
Why do I keep questioning this stuff that makes it not like real life? Of course it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, why would I want like a terrible tragedy like Waco for me to watch it? Why would I want that to be?
Yeah, or Chernobyl or something like
that. Yeah, or what's the one that you guys just talked about, the Schindler's List? That'd be bad. Yeah. But anyway.
Did you know that this movie has been made into a musical?
Is it the same song over and over? That would get really annoying.
And there's a video game.
That was the same level. Each day is a level. It's
like father, level. Like son. I don't know what that means.
You're on level 1,000,000 and 2. It's the same one.
Well, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was also going to say that it says that multiple religious groups have tried to argue that this is a religious allegory. It says Buddhists, Christians, and Jews. So I don't exactly know what they're saying it allegorizes, if that's a word. But that's interesting that it's something that people try to adapt to their own. I can't imagine that any of those belief systems are probably what the directors are, but sometimes they try to make the movie so that the viewer can kind of take them and make it into what they want it to be, kind of.
Yeah, abstract.
Well, and just to go ahead and help you, and part of the journey of this, as you watch it for many years to come, it was not filmed in Punxsutawney.
That probably would have cost too much money. I don't like that they don't film movies in the actual locations. I wish that you could be like, yeah, we were in Punxsutawney. There's no actual reason that you would need to do that. It's just would be cool.
But it was in Woodstock, Illinois. Mm. Illinois. And so I was a little disappointed in that because I thought, you know what, if I would love to go there, a little bucket list, go and see the same stuff, but nope, you won't see the same
you
stuff.
You can't go there on Groundhog Day. You can go to Punxsutawney on Groundhog Day. Yes, they will have festivities.
I still do want
to
do that.
But you can't see the stuff that was in the movie. So that is disappointing.
You can pretend, like you can just wake up at 6 a.m. every morning, wear the same clothes.
For a whole month, I was in...
be an experience.
I was going to have to go to Woodstock, Illinois to celebrate Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
That's
where's Woodstock, Illinois?
In Woodstock, Illinois.
Yeah, well, yeah, but like which part of Illinois? I imagine it's
close to Chicago.
Oh, is it close to Chicago?
That's all I can.
Yes, this is like Christmas Story was filmed in Cleveland but set in Indiana.
What?
Yeah.
It's filmed in
There's a Christmas Story house you can go to in Cleveland.
I'm not that interested.
We should do a movie vault outside of the Woodstock house in freezing temperatures, because I'm not sure that they would let us do it inside.
Why don't we wait till the summer?
Christmas in July episode.
No. We don't even film. We can just say we're there. Okay.
That's true. We can just release it. And
no, we're so authentic.
I was just complaining about this very thing, and you were like, no, let's just be part of the problem.
Whatever. Just edit it. No,
we can just say that is that what you're saying? We can just say that we're at the house?
Yeah.
Like, we're at the Christmas Story house right now.
Hey, we're in Punxsutawney?
Yeah, we're in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania now.
Yeah, we're in that place right now.
how would the listener even know that we weren't? Like,
as long as you're playing the Pennsylvania polka,
yes,
then people will believe it.
It's because it's outlawed in other states.
Yeah. Also, if you noticed that the Punxsutawney polka played before the episode started, that this is your Shazam reference now to what the song was. That is assuming that I got it to work. So now you get to be in this weird where like, did it work? Now I'm thinking back and this is going to totally mess with
you. You can go back and right now you're at, what's the time? And check the time and we can remind them so they don't have to pause it. Yeah, if you go back, we're at 48:28 right now. You can come right back and we'll wait, all right?
And this is your reward for making it this long. We're going to start putting stuff in that you wouldn't be able to, if you didn't listen this far.
We're going to start recording them out of order, and we're going to have to tell you when the next time point
wait
is.
Wait for our memento episode, because we're gonna like edit the podcast so that like it meets in the middle.
For Tenet, we should have done that.
Yeah, we should. That would
where
be
we
so cool.
We did it forward and then backwards. Like, we did the back half of it backwards, and it's the beginning. So we're like, all right, go to timestamp 48, reverse. Until 62 to 48.
We're like giving instructions.
and listen to headphones and have your Morse code handbook ready.
when we made it backwards and then we like shift pitched the vocals so that was in Morse code so that you could decode it. And then if you go in the future, then you'll understand something that you can go back to the start of the episode and you'll get like the whole point of it.
Anyway.
Oh, that was stupid.
But I actually want to do that
though. Yeah, I know. That would be really fun.
Interactive podcast.
Yeah. You know, there's this other feature on Anchor that we can have people can call in and we can play your call-ins. So I might look into figuring out how to set that up, because if we told people that we were doing this movie and then we asked them to send stuff in, and then we could play it and we could respond to it. So that could be kind of fun. There's also a new Q&A feature on Spotify. So I may play around with asking a question and then you can go onto Spotify and type in your answer to the question. This is just potential ideas that we're brainstorming right this
moment. That should be behind the scenes.
Most of Zach and I's planning for the podcast actually occurs on air.
It's the only time we have.
We actually only talk about it. So the last 10 minutes of every episode is just like a meeting between Zach and I about what we're going
to
do.
I'm glad you get to listen in. Yeah, Mr. Anglin gets to see how it actually works right now. Oh, man. Yeah.
Living the dream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. We missed this in the middle of the episode, but we normally do your agency's advertisement in the middle. But I figured since you're on, we can give you the opportunity to pitch.
Wow,
that's how lazy we are.
As you want to.
Wow.
Even though we should have done it in the middle.
Well, in the past, y'all picked accidents that have occurred, and
we try to pick something that happened in the movie that, even if it remotely relates to insurance, we try to bring it in there.
There's a lot of death in this movie. It's hard to pay dead people for an insurance claim. But I'll always say, just from a personal note, thank you for always giving a shout out to Hedman Anglin Agency. We really appreciate it. We enjoy watching your podcast, listening to your podcast. Sorry, I felt like I was watching.
Well, we have two video episodes. Yeah. So if you go to our YouTube, it's still plugged in our description. You can still go watch the two episodes that we have videotaped.
I enjoy watching you today too. Don't worry.
I literally could say I enjoyed watching you today. It's the only time I'll probably ever get to say it.
Maybe one day we'll get the video component to where it doesn't take like 4 hours to set up and figure out how to
lenses.
Do it.
And here's what I'll say. I say, next time you watch Groundhog's Day and you think of Ned Ryerson, give us a call. See if we can help you. Get you water backup coverage. Get you life insurance. You name it. We'll find it for you. So,
and you don't.
That's my plug.
You don't want to be the person.
Am I right? Am I right?
You don't want to be the person who called the insurance company that you need insurance after the thing that happened. Like, if you need water damage insurance, you should not do it after you already have water damage. It's a preventative thing. It's like, I'm in nursing school, we're learning about preventing diseases before they happen, preventing worse things from happening. Insurance is kind of the same thing. You want to prevent, or it's not exactly the same thing, because having insurance won't prevent bad things from happening, but it will lessen the impact of the things that happen.
And I'm not a claim adjuster, and they'll probably discover that in the process of that claim. So, yeah, you're right. Great advice. Great advice.
All right. Does we want to go around and say some closing thoughts about Groundhog Day?
No, I don't.
That's not fair.
All right.
I know, I'll say something. I think I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it more than I thought. Legitimately, I actually did. I was going into it thinking, old movie, might be good, might be bad. That's usually how it goes for me. But older movie, not super old. You're not that old. But it was good. I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I had the privilege of watching it with my parents, which might be the first time that I watched a Movie Vault movie with my parents, like before the movie. So that's kind of a cool thing. Maybe I'll do that more often. So shout out, Mom and Dad. I know you're listening. They're like the two listeners that we have consistently.
Awesome.
I'm just kidding. And they had they.
You're welcome, mom and dad.
Yeah,
they were in this movie, so they all watch it with your son. Listen to it with your son. And
he planned it.
they were in college when this movie came out, but they must have missed it because they were like, oh yeah, we had never watched it. They probably weren't the biggest moviegoers, but they really enjoyed it too. So. Maybe we'll have to watch some more older movies that they missed out on.
Or a new tradition with your family.
Yeah, and that's the perfect thing about when this is coming out is that, well, Groundhog Day has already happened, and I think we're going to get 6 more weeks of winter.
We are in the middle of 6 weeks, aren't we?
Pretty sure we are because the weather outside is currently
frightening,
fairly wintry, I would say. And I almost got stuck on the way here, actually, but I didn't, so that was good. So that was kind of the nice thing. You got to watch it for the first time with somebody who was alive during when it came out, but didn't see it. And then I didn't see it. And then I got to talk to somebody who saw it when it first came out. And then Zach's like pretty much in the same position as me. And I thought it had a lot of interesting, aspects to it philosophically. And it, was groundbreaking in the sense that it did something that no other movie did before that I know of.
It was groundhog breaking.
Yeah. I don't think that any movie did this repeating thing. And so many things have copied it since then. So,
which hence the movie, of course. Yeah. Anyway.
Sort of lives.
I think the best summary will come from you. I'm hyping you up.
You need a summary from me.
No, I mean, closing thoughts, because Ben and I don't have that
closing
perspective.
Closing thought, perspective. Treat other people nice. Serve other people.
Mm.
Go and live a life of serving people. That's it. So, good luck.
That was
gonna be a little hard to do, but you know, maybe a lifetime to learn how to do it well. So, that was a little too serious, wasn't it?
No,
that's about the best thing that you could say. Which means that we should probably
end it,
not ruin
I'm
it.
Just joking.
And go ahead and close the vault. So. The vault's very portable these days.
Yeah.
We if you want to be on the podcast, we won't promise, but we may be able to bring the podcast to you. But
we do deliveries.
That is not. If you pay us a certain amount of money,
we're on Grubhub right now. There's an extra fee for me though.
If you want just Ben and Zach won't come, it's one fee. If you want just Zach, it costs the same as
you have to have Grubhub Premium, okay? Okay, for the Zach. Zach is premium.
His time is more valuable than mine. So.
Hence the plus.
All right. Yeah. Should we close it?
Sure. How should I close it? How should we close it?
Maybe you could do your music in the end, and the beginning, and the end.
Oh, and we should leave all this in so they know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we go. Welcome to the Movie Vault. I'm Ben.
And I'm Zach.
And we have...
Jonathan England.
So today we're doing a movie that I think is one of your favorite movies.
It is.
Go back to second one to understand the rest.
It is now, officially, after today.
That's good.